a lot of these technologies and capabilities aren't new. They've been around for a while. It's how we're taking all of them to converge these technologies, and the convergence of them together is what's creating this fascinating potential. Well, it's not even potential, it's here.
This is a Security Weekly production. Security Weekly is a resource of Cyber Risk Alliance.
The Cybersecurity Collaborative and WIS is proud to present CISO Stories. Each week, CISO Stories takes a deep dive on security leadership with one of the contributors to my latest book, the best-selling CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers, as well as from other top CISOs and security thought leaders. The Cybersecurity Collaborative is a unique membership community enabling cybersecurity leaders to work together in a trusted environment. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/CSC or visit cyberleadersunite.com. I am your host, Todd Fitzgerald, and this week we welcome Patty Titus, Chief Security and Privacy Officer at the Markel Corporation.
I'm one of those cases where I complained that nobody was doing security at the Transportation Security Administration when it was a brand new federal agency. And I think I wore down the CIO. And he said, well, guess what? You're going to do that too. So that's really how I started in this field about 20 years ago. And it's a fascinating field that is constantly evolving and changing.
So you've seen this field grow all throughout these years. I mean, that's because in the last 20 years, we've had significant change in this field.
So actually I started my career out in the Air Force as a Morse code operator in the Electronic Security Command. So even before digital radio, so I've seen a lot of change in technology from the beginning, but I would say in the last 20 years, we've seen significant changes in the threat landscape, in the technologies that we use to defend ourselves, and even watching some of the offensive security that's now taking place through federal governments and nation states. It's interesting for sure.
Yeah, excellent. Well, obviously it's kept you in the field for quite a while now. So we're talking today about the future is now and the convergence of all these technologies. So you want to give us a little insight into your thinking around this topic?
Sure. I think it's important that we start thinking about what can happen to our world and how much it can be transformed in the near term. So when we think about the convergence of artificial intelligence, machine learning, 3D printing, the biotechnology, AR and VR, artificial reality and virtual reality. How is that going to change what we do today, how we think, and how these technologies will play into the future? So a few of us had gotten together during the RSA conference, and we did a presentation called The Jetsons Are Here. Now, what are the security implications? And so I think a group of us who are security and privacy professionals got together to really dig into this and do some research around it. Because not that this happens regularly, but it does happen regularly. Security is brought to the table at the end or after something's already been deployed. So what we'd like to do is try to get a little bit more ahead of it and start understanding what's happening and then look at what are the potential downsides to all of this convergence of technology, but it's fascinating how quickly it's moving.
I'm still waiting for my Rosie robot. I love that show as a kid, and it is funny how all these TV shows, like all the analogies to Star Trek, for example, and now we see the phones and everything in everybody's pocket, that these things aren't that far-fetched when somebody thought of them years ago that they could actually happen.
Well, who would have thought? I'm kind of an old Dick Tracy fan. I love the Dick Tracy comics. Who would have thought I could talk to people on my... Yes, exactly. So it's a lot of changes with these watches and things that people thought about as futuristic they're here. And the question is, what should we be thinking about? How should we be thinking about this?
Yeah, excellent. And I have a book. I forget what the title is, but it was made the year I was born. And it talked about the future technologies, and it talks about some that made it and some that, you know, that were just ideas that still aren't there yet, like the flying spaceships. Except, if you look at, I think it's in Japan, there's a car that actually does fly. It's like a one-seater little car that is like a mini airplane. So these things do transform themselves. So what sort of things did you in your presentation? I find that to be fascinating. What sort of things did you come up with?
Well, what's interesting is a lot of these technologies and capabilities aren't new. They've been around for a while. It's how we're taking all of them to converge these technologies, and the convergence of them together is what's creating this fascinating potential. Well, it's not even potential, it's here. So there's a book that we researched and read. The book is called The Future is Faster Than You Think. And it really is looking at the solitary disruptors that are happening across the marketplace. And they're happening a bit in isolation, but what we're starting to see is they're coming together. So Elon Musk with the electric car is also looking at the Hyperloop, which is a capability of transportation and moving people at speeds. So there's actually 25 different flying companies, flying car companies, that are actually looking at how do I make a flying vehicle? So to go to your thought on, it's not quite there yet. We are pretty close. So Uber has been buying up garages, parking garages, with the concept that that will be an autonomous flying vehicle that will move people from point A to point B. So let me break this down into a little bit more. So the problem with helicopters, so I know when I, many years ago, I went to Bogota, Colombia, and I noted that there's a lot of helicopters flying around. And that because of the congestion in these countries and these cities, they've come up with alternative ways to move people, which of course you have to be fairly wealthy to be able to get on a helicopter or own a helicopter to go from point A to point B. The other problem with helicopters is A, they're loud. They're combustible engines, so they're not electric. They have a single rotor, and that single rotor unfortunately fails. And if it fails, that's a bad thing. So when the company started looking at how do we solve this transportation problem for people, the concept came up with taking a drone, making it big enough so that it can hold people. The drone would have, or the autonomous vehicle, would have 12 rotors flying, spinning, instead of a single rotor. So if one, two, or three of them failed, the likelihood that the others could balance it out and the aircraft could land safely, the probability goes much higher from a public safety perspective. They can fly electric. They are quiet. I don't know how many times I've been at a place and someone's getting married and there's a drone flying up above the resort. And it's quiet. You can't really hear it. It sounds kind of like a hummingbird. And I'm imagining this going to be a little bit louder with 12 rotors turning and big enough to carry humans. So imagine then if I were to be able to connect my Microsoft O365 calendar to my rideshare company, where I have it specifically noted that I need a vehicle to pick me up in the morning and take me to one of these autonomous aircraft locations because I need to fly to New York City for a meeting. And they are, my autonomous vehicle picks me up at my house, drives me to the local station that's close enough to where I'm living, that is going to fly me straight to New York City, that autonomous vehicle knows exactly where to drop me, so I'm close to my meeting. I come out of my where my autonomous flying vehicle has landed. My autonomous vehicle is waiting for me there to take me to my meeting. And a meeting that might have taken me 2 days with travel to go spend the night, depending on locations, weather, all kinds of disruptions with air carriers. I instead fly all the way to New York and am home in 4 hours or less. And so all of this is happening while I'm connected. I mean, my systems are all connected together. And it's a seamless experience for me. I don't have to physically drive anything. So that means I can get work done while I'm riding in the car, while I'm riding in my autonomous flight vehicle.
Interesting. And safety, obviously, is the big concern there, right? To make sure that drone is actually going to stay in the air as long as you need it to.
Right. Right. Well, imagine, and it's electric, so it's got to be plugged in and charged at some point. So is that the opportunity to run diagnostics on it at the same time? So you're running diagnostics on it to make sure that all of it is updated and current. Now, here's where it gets a little bit interesting, Todd. So imagine that I'm a threat actor, and I know that someone important in the U.S. government happens to be not taking the train that day, but happening on the flight, and I can take control of that particular autonomous vehicle that's flying or driving, or I've been able to compromise their calendar, and I now have access to know where the individual is at any given time. So for all the positives, there's also the nefarious side of it that can be done. So while these technologies are being designed and thought of, for all these companies that are out there looking at ways to solve our carbon footprint problems, be better stewards of our planet, we also have to think about how we're going to add the safety and privacy mechanisms into it. So long time ago, there was technology when I worked at TSA, was called At a Glance. And we had deployed it, a company had deployed it overseas, and we were looking at it as a potential opportunity for us to speed up the whole screening process with trusted travelers, which we have today with TSA Pre and Global Entry and Clear, all of those programs. So imagine being able to take that technology and capability with a biometric to be able to ensure that the people that are getting onto the autonomous vehicle have had some sort of a cleared background, right? Because what you don't want is if you've got a autonomous vehicle that's carrying 10 people, you have one bad person on there that's, you know, either going to hack the system while he's on the plane or the aircraft, or worst case scenario, blow it up. So we still have to be thinking about all of the physical and concerns that we have in any type of traveling device or vehicle. We still have to think of the safety. You're absolutely right. That's super important. So as these technologies, as people like Elon Musk look at investing in these electric and the Hyperloop, the flying cars, they're actually talking about taking rockets and putting people in rocket ships to get them from New York to Australia in so much less time than it would take, moving at speeds that, you know, moving at, as we say in Star Trek, at warp speed. And then instead of sending me, while a meeting, I'm very important, I want to be at the meeting, but I can't, can I send an avatar? Can I send a basically a computer robot to represent me if it's a meeting where I'm really just listening and taking notes so that I can optimize my time? And then through voice recognition and some other cool technologies, I could actually read the notes in my spare time while I'm riding in my autonomous vehicle to my next meeting. I'm catching up on that avatar who happens to be sitting in another meeting for me.
The article this podcast is based upon can be viewed in the best-selling cybersecurity leadership book, CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers. And this stuff always sounds so outlandish at the beginning. And I'm sure, you know, if we go back into air travel and look at the Wright brothers and the early airplanes and the fact that when we were flying on airplanes early, it was only the rich that could really afford to go on an airplane somewhere. And now we see this is a normal thing that we do. I know that Billy Joel, for example, takes a helicopter from his home to Madison Square Garden, where he has a standing gig, because he doesn't want to fight the New York traffic. Well, not everybody can afford a helicopter ride from their home to where they're trying to go. But as these costs get down, it makes these things more realistic. And I think that we've seen electric cars, and where that was a dream at one point, now we have, you know, how many Teslas on the road? Was it 500,000 Teslas or something like that? So we see people working on these things that they eventually become a reality. So what should we be doing in our organizations to help prepare for some of these new technologies, and what sort of organizations should be looking at this kind of stuff?
So I think there'll eventually be regulation, I'm sure, around it, as there's now discussions, a lot of very healthy discussions around artificial intelligence and machine learning. There's a lot of discussion around collection of biometric data, biographical data. How much do you collect? How much do you store? How do you store it? It's similar to just any privacy or non-PI data, so non-public information that a company might have. I think what's important is that we think about how it will impact our industries. So obviously, I'm in the insurance industry, and so we're looking at what are the potentials for that going forward from opportunity from a product line development to protect or to expand existing insurance products that we have. So every industry is going to have a different type of impact. Obviously, the high tech industry is going to be looking at how do I capitalize on that and build my own company. But I think the most important part is that we don't blindly go into this converged technology without thinking about the pros and the cons to it. And that it's probably an opportunity for some think tanks to actually start really, really, really digging into what does this mean, not just for the converged technology and how great that is. And the things, I mean, we talked about transportation, but there's also all of the positive things that can happen with healthcare, with a nanobot, nanosensor technology. And so I think each vertical market is going to have to look at it and say, how does this impact us? How can we help? And start thinking about, you know, we have to bring those of us that are the paid paranoids, like CISOs, and bring us into the conversation and say, what could possibly go wrong with this? What possibly could happen that we need to think about in advance of these technologies really hitting the marketplace and becoming mainstream and becoming available to not rich people, but to everyone? And then how do we encourage that growth of those things that will, again, going back to that whole ESG mentality, how do we help this, let this technology help us be better stewards in our cities or our states or our countries?
Do you find that the companies are willing to invest money in this now, or are they saying, "Yeah, that's out there. We'll let the Elon Musks of the world figure this stuff out"?
Well, I think unfortunately there's been some failures of some of the big electric vehicles. So we've seen some failures of some of the car manufacturers who've said, "You know, we've got chip problems in combustible engines. How are we ever going to come up with chipsets that are going to solve our problem. So I think the supply chain issues are pushing things behind of where we had anticipated they would be. COVID probably didn't do anybody any favors. I think we've got to, I really think that from an investment perspective, companies could be looking at where does it make the most sense. So yes, transportation is a big deal. There are some cities that are only building and designing their cities to allow autonomous vehicles in them. So if you think of some of the small islands along the East Coast where you can't actually take a vehicle, there's no motor vehicles on the islands, and there's several of those across the world. Is there an opportunity for cities to take that same approach? So I love Billy Joel, one of my favorite artists, by the way, and I've seen him at Madison Square Gardens. But imagine if New York City were all only autonomous vehicles, and that the autonomous vehicles moved people, either autonomous vehicles or trains or whatever, and that you start designing the city to support that type of transportation, the electric bikes, the, you know, things like that that can move people around a city. So I don't think it's so far-fetched. I think it's more of how can we incentivize cities to do this? Because from a carbon footprint, it's going to help decrease pollution and help with that. But let's not overlook the fact that we're solving for a small problem here where there may be a bigger problem being created somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the areas where investments are already taking place are in the healthcare areas. And I think that's probably something when I think about quantum computing and the speed with which compute will get to and how we can use quantum computing. And it's actually being used today for research and design and looking at diseases that people have and trying to come to conclusions faster than we could previously, where you can put a computation and it takes minutes instead of, if you remember the old Cray computer days, I'm really dating myself here, it would take months to do a complex calculation. Now we have the opportunity to do it in seconds. There's also, you know, material sciences, looking at graphene. So graphene is a million times thinner than a human hair, but 200 times stronger than steel. And you could take a sheet of graphene, put it on a football field, and it would weigh half a penny. So when you think about the material sciences capability, that shape-shifting material, like liquid metal, there's infinite opportunity. And I think we need to start considering how do we think outside the box. And I'm kind of all over the map here because there's so many cool things that we could talk about. But biotechnology, where they're able to do gene therapy, not just to take out defective DNA, but they can replace it completely with stem cell. So there's so many things happening where we're converging these technologies for all the positive things. And obviously the negative side of, you know, if I put on my paid paranoid hat, imagine nanobiology, nanosensors, nanobots, where if I wanted to do harm to somebody, I could have them inhale like a nanobot. They wouldn't even know it because it's so small. So there's for every ounce of goodness that can be done, there's also the potential for nefarious type of activity.
So as a paid paranoid, I love that expression, by the way. So as a CISO, what should CISOs do today in their programs, knowing that there's all these different technology opportunities? What could they do today to make themselves more effective?
I think we have to become involved. So this is an opportunity as this technology is coming into the forefront to be more involved, to sit at the table. Although I'll say some CISOs have trouble just sitting at a table in a manual world or non-digital world. But we have to be curious, and we need to be provocative in our questions about what can this capability do or bring to our industry? How do we get involved? Are there think tanks that are out there that are starting to go down the path, like an MIT or some of the bigger universities? Who's looking at these capabilities, and how can we learn more about it? So what we don't want to do is we don't want, it's my famous line, I'd rather be part of something versus having it happen to me. I'd like to participate in it as it's happening. I'd like to be investigative. I'd like to look at where potential changes could impact my company, my vertical market. And then how do I bring my thinking to the forefront? And I think, you know, honestly, this group of women that got together to talk about these subjects, we need to have more of that. We need to talk more about the potential ups and downs of these capabilities and technology convergences.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fantastic. You really opened my eyes to more things. I mean, the visual of having something that's as strong as steel covering a football field that weighs a penny is just mind-boggling to me. So thanks much for taking the time, Patty. And what other advice would you give to current CISOs, emerging CISOs, or experienced CISOs as they're going along this journey?
You know, I think technology has changed at a rapid pace, and we've all been very involved in it. Artificial intelligence and machine learning, it's been around. I think we need to be very hyper-focused on the responsible use of these technologies. So what guidelines should we be laying out as we become more technology enabled, as this technology starts to converge and it becomes part of our world? How do we ensure that we're laying out the right safety duty of care for our employees, for people that are using these technologies or who may be investing in these capabilities? And I think it's an opportunity for us to get ahead of it. It's interesting. And you're right. People may say, yeah, we'll let someone else deal with it. We don't want to be the first to the beachhead, but you don't want to be the last either, because then you're going to have it done to you versus you participating in its growth. So start looking into the think tanks, start providing feedback to regulations that are coming out. There usually is a public comment on things that are impacting our industries. Get to know and get familiarized with those organizations that are helping to influence regulation and laws on the Hill. So in the US and obviously in the EU, there's plenty of opportunity to get involved as well.
Well, I think that's great advice, Patty. And thank you very much for taking the time.
Thanks, Todd, for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope we can continue it.
You too. Thank you.
WISD is on a mission to help every organization rapidly identify and remove critical risks in their cloud environments. Purpose-built for the cloud, WISD delivers full-stack visibility, accurate risk prioritization, and enhanced business agility. WISD connects in minutes using an agentless approach that scans both platform configurations and inside every workload. We perform a deep assessment that goes beyond what standalone CSPM and CWPP tools offer to find a toxic combination of flaws that represent real risk. To learn more about WIS, please visit securityweekly.com/WIS.